VOA 1.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Dan Friedel and Faith Perlow have a story on the Native American tradition of pipe making. Later, Brian Lynn presents this week's Science Report. We close our show with a visit to Florida's Biscayne National Park. But first, here are Dan and Faith.
A tribe of Native Americans in the northern state of Minnesota digs up a special kind of rock and forms it into a device used for smoking called a pipe. The dark red rock is known as pipestone because it has been used for a long time to make the smoking tool. The native people consider the rock and pipes sacred, but over time, people moved away from the area and others died. As a result, not many people are permitted to dig out the rock, and not many others know how to make the pipes. Only about 12 people remain in the area who know how to carve the pipes. Cindy Peterson is one of them. She learned from her grandparents over 50 years ago. She said she would be happy to teach the pipe carving skill to anyone. She added, "The spirit will be with you if you're meant to do that." Peterson is one of the Dakota people who want to pass along the skill to future generations. She is part of the Sisseton Wahpetone Dakota Nation. She holds classes on pipe carving at a small park near the rock quarries. The park in the southwestern part of the state is called Pipestone National Monument. Darlene St. Clair is a member of the Dakota tribe. She is a professor at St. Cloud State University in Minnesota. She also uses the Dakota name Laikiapiwin to show she is a member of the tribe. St. Clair said the pipestone is important to the spiritual activities of the Native Americans. "Praying with pipes, we take very seriously," she said.
"Smoking a pipe made from the deep red rock is thought to connect the smoker with the Creator. The Creator is similar to what many religions mean when they discuss God. The smoke moves a prayer from the person with the pipe to the Creator." Gabrielle Drapeau said the pipestone area was always a place for prayer. Even enemy tribes would stop fighting when they arrived at the pipestone area. Tradition has it that if people fought on the ground of the pipestone, the rock would stop being available. Drapeau is a park ranger and cultural resource specialist. She started coming to the rock area as a child. She is part of the Yankton Sioux tribe of South Dakota. When she was young, she heard a story about why the rock turned red. Many people died in a great flood, and their blood changed the color of the rock. The Creator then came to the area and said if people smoked from a pipe, they could reach him with a message. Drapeau said those who smoke the pipes also feel connected to all the people who came before. It's not just a willy-nilly stone, she said. Willy-nilly is a combination of words meant to show that something is unimportant. Because of that, the rock is protected. If you want to cut the rock from the ground, you need to have permission. Only those who are members of Native American tribes can come to remove the rock. While some, like Peterson, want to teach pipe making to others, there is disagreement about whether non-Native Americans should be permitted to learn.
Some think the pipe making knowledge should only be shared with other Native Americans. In addition, many Native Americans think only indigenous people should be permitted to use the pipes. Travis Erickson is one of those people permitted to take the rock from the ground. He started doing that at the age of 10. The diggers must work only with hand tools to protect the pipestone area. Erickson started making the pipes with his family in the 1960s. He learned with other family members and went on to teach his own children how to do the work. But 60 years later, not many people want to do the difficult job of cutting out the pipestone and making the pipes. He wants to teach the skills to as many young Native Americans as possible. Many of the young people only learn about the pipestone and the pipes when they come for visits.
Cindy Peterson's brother, Mark, also teaches at the Visitor Center. He recently taught a number of young people how to swing heavy hammers. Many wanted to return and learn more about cutting out the pipestone. They also tell the young people the history of the area and its important place in the spiritual life of Native Americans. Drapeau said she tells them they are permitted to come to Pipestone for prayer. In the past, many Native people were restricted from coming to Pipestone for prayer events. The Pipestone National Monument is run by the National Park Service, a U.S. government agency. About 75,000 people visit each year. The government and the Native people decided that pipes would no longer be sold in the visitor center. But non-Indigenous people can still buy the pipes just a short distance away, at stores in the town of Pipestone.
The Native people say they want to protect their traditions. Greg Gagnon studies Native Americans and wrote a book about Dakota culture. He said many Native people are worried that their traditions will be watered down if they permit everyone to use the pipes. But Peterson said she is not worried. She said the spirit works to help people who create the pipes and receive them. Grandma and Grandpa always said the stone takes care of itself, knows what's in a person's heart, she said. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Faith Perlow.
The James Webb Space Telescope recently celebrated its first year in operation. During that time, the orbiting observatory, operated by the American Space Agency, NASA, produced colorful, detailed images. It has also helped researchers make several new scientific discoveries. NASA has described the telescope as the largest, most powerful telescope ever sent into space. The agency launched the Webb in late 2021 and released its first images in July 2022. The Webb's first full-color images were presented by President Joe Biden. One of the images showed the clearest picture yet of the early universe, about 13 billion years ago. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson marked the anniversary with a statement. He said, "In just 1 year, the James Webb Space Telescope has transformed humanity's view of the cosmos, peering into dust clouds and seeing light from faraway corners of the universe for the very first time." Most recently, NASA celebrated the Webb's one-year anniversary by releasing one of its latest images. The image showed a cloud collection of 50 stars in the process of forming. NASA said the image showed an area of space that is full of hydrogen gas and dust. Scientists said the image was a good representation of this brief period in a star's life. At around the same time, researchers announced they had used data from the Webb to identify the most distant active supermassive black hole ever observed. Scientists say the black hole sits in a galaxy called Sears 1019. The galaxy is thought to have existed about 570 million years after the Big Bang, the explosion many scientists believe created the universe. The black hole discovery and others that received help from the Webb were in part made possible through the telescope's infrared instruments. The instruments collect infrared waves passing through gas and dust that can hide objects in space. The infrared system also shows light from more distant parts of the universe. The Webb's instruments have also confirmed the distances of some of the farthest galaxies ever observed, NASA reported. In addition, the telescope's data has provided more detailed information than ever before about the makeup of planet atmospheres. And the instruments have also led to discoveries about the chemicals and gases that exist around collections of stars and exoplanets outside of our solar system. For example, the Webb helped astronomers observe the most distant molecules known to exist in the universe and also led to the discovery of 12 new moons orbiting Jupiter. In a statement marking the Webb's one-year anniversary, NASA noted the telescope had resulted in hundreds of scientific papers, answering long-standing questions and raising new ones. Eric Smith is a Webb program scientist and associate director for research in the astrophysics division at NASA headquarters in Washington. He said the Webb's wide abilities to support new science discoveries has already become clear. Webb's first year of science has not only taught us new things about our universe, but it has revealed the capabilities of the telescope to be greater than our expectations, meaning future discoveries will be even more amazing, Smith said. NASA has said the Webb has enough fuel to operate for at least 20 years. it will soon be joined in orbit by Europe's Euclid Space Telescope, which launched on July 1st. Euclid's main goal, or mission, is to collect data on two of the universe's greatest mysteries, dark energy and dark matter. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about his science report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Of course, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
This week's report took a look back at the first year of discoveries by NASA's James Webb Space Telescope. And there seems to be a lot of such discoveries. What are some of the biggest findings NASA identified?
So the James Webb team has pointed to some major areas the telescope was able to help scientists make new discoveries, and these include the telescope's ability to collect more detailed data on the formation of galaxies and stars and the makeup of atmospheres of planets outside our own solar system. And it was able to gather this data because its infrared instruments can cut through gas and dust that can hide objects in space.
And what is NASA saying about what all this new telescope data will be used for?
Well, the James Webb team has said this data can be used to support all kinds of research, and we've seen this over the past year with numerous studies. One dealt with observations of the most distant molecules known to exist in the universe. Another was the discovery of the most distant supermassive black hole ever found. And in addition, NASA says it hopes the telescope can, in the future, help speed up the process of searching for habitable worlds that have never been identified before.
All right. Well, thanks for answering my questions, Brian. And thank you again for your report.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Every day, VOA Learning English receives questions and comments from listeners around the world. Today, we answer a question from an English learner named Zengui. Zengui asks, "How can I speak English very well and sound like an American? I am from Niger, a country in Africa. I hope you will help me." I asked Learning English teacher John Russell to join me to help answer Zengui's question. John hosts a video program called How to Pronounce. Hi, John.
Hi, Ashley. Thanks for having me on the show. Zengui's question is a good one, and a complex one. Speaking skills take time to develop. The good news is that with a plan and some effort, you can really improve. If you are interested in sounding like an American, you should follow our pronunciation program called How to Pronounce. We have over 100 videos that explore many elements of the American accent, individual sounds, stress, intonation, and so on. Your plan is simple. Budget 10 minutes to practice each day. Spend 2 to 4 minutes watching a How to Pronounce video. Then spend the remainder of your time practicing with what you have learned. By the time you have done this program for a few months, we guarantee that your pronunciation skills will be much stronger.
Thanks so much for that advice, John. You can watch all of John's How to Pronounce videos on our website, on YouTube, or on our Facebook page.
On our national parks journey, we head to southern Florida. Here, you will find blue-green seas, marine wildlife, and islands that hold thousands of years of human history. Welcome to Biscayne National Park. Biscayne is not very far from the lights, noise, and excitement of downtown Miami. But it has a very different atmosphere from the big city. Biscayne National Park was established as a national monument in 1968. It became a national park in 1980. That year, its size also increased. The park now covers more than 70,000 hectares. It includes the northern part of the world-famous Florida Keys. Keys are low-lying islands or reefs.
If you enjoy water, Biscayne is the park for you. 95% of the park is water. Many kinds of animals live within the park. Some of them are threatened or endangered. You will find the huge, gentle West Indian manatee, the less gentle American crocodile, several kinds of sea turtles, and more than 500 species of fish. Four ecosystems come together here, which is what makes the park so diverse. The blending ecosystems create what is called edge communities. These edge communities support a huge array of wildlife. The underwater diversity is what attracts most people to Biscayne National Park. Many visitors come here to snorkel or scuba dive in Biscayne's clear and warm waters.
Human history at Biscayne begins more than 10,000 years ago. Scientists say evidence of the area's earliest people is mostly underwater now, as water levels have risen over time. Within the last 3,000 years, people began to settle in the area. Scientists continue to learn about these people by examining the big hills of shells they left behind. The shells contain other waste, too, including early tools and housewares. As the population grew, it divided into separate cultures. The groups began making pottery and created trade networks. These Native Americans are called the Tequesta. The Tequesta depended on the rich food source of the sea to survive. They were not centered on farming, which requires huge amounts of time. So the Tequesta had more time than other natives for art and religion. Very complex social structures developed as a result. European explorers began arriving in the area in the early 1500s. They brought with them diseases like smallpox and measles. Over time, these diseases killed huge numbers of Florida's natives. Early explorers arrived in the area on ships. The reefs and rough waters made it difficult for ship captains. Biscayne's waters contain more than 50 shipwrecks. Scuba divers today can explore 6 of them.
Among them is the Earl King, which sank in 1891. It was built in 1865. Earl King was mostly used to transport goods, but it also carried wealthy passengers. In its first few years of service, it was used for trading between China and Australia. The ship hit Long Reef as it sailed to New Orleans from England in 1891. Its machinery and other parts were saved, but Earl King itself sank to the sea floor. Another shipwreck that scuba divers can explore is the Lugano. The British steamship sank in 1913. At the time of its sinking, it was the largest ship ever to wreck in the Florida Keys. It was traveling to Havana, Cuba, carrying goods and more than 100 passengers. Most of them were Spaniards immigrating to Cuba. High winds and heavy seas sent the ship far off course. A collision with Long Reef damaged the ship. Much of the cargo and all of the passengers were safely removed. The captain and crew remained aboard. Many people tried to remove the water from Lugano and repair it, but after several weeks, they abandoned their efforts. Today, the Lugano remains on Long Reef, almost 8 meters below water.
Many visitors to Biscayne National Park choose to explore underwater. Guides lead snorkeling and scuba diving trips. These give visitors the chance to get up close to the park's underwater wildlife as well as its shipwrecks. Visitors can also explore the park on a boat. Canoeing and kayaking are great ways to enjoy Biscayne's mangrove forests. Mangroves are little trees that grow in coastal waters. Many people take a kayak or canoe around the islands and lagoons. At Elliott Key, visitors can set up camp and sleep in the wild. At Boca Chica Key, visitors can explore a lighthouse. The lighthouse has become a symbol of Biscayne National Park. It was built in the 1930s by Mark Honeywell, one of the island's former owners. The deck at the top of the 20-meter-tall lighthouse provides beautiful views of the ocean and the nearby islands. The top of the lighthouse also offers views of Miami Beach's famous skyline. But visitors to Biscayne National Park probably are not there to see skyscrapers and city lights. The beauty in Biscayne is quiet waters, rustling mangroves, and, if you're lucky, a visit with a manatee. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.